Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 2 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Thanks to all those who listened to show number 1 and all those really kind comments, we really appreciated it. For this show, we're going to talk about what goes into the planning of a trip to Walt Disney World, maybe some of the sites we visit, some of the things we do to pack. So, here we go on with the show. This is Ed.
This is Farrah.
This is Jimmy.
And here we go. Now, one of the things I get asked a lot is, how do I pack for a trip to Walt Disney World? Or how do I even plan for a trip to Walt Disney World? Everybody knows the parks are pretty big and the amount of hotels, restaurants, it could be overwhelming. Although, once you've gone a couple times, it does ease out a little bit. Today, what we're going to do is talk about some of the things we do to plan the trips. Jimmy actually is going to be going in a couple days, so he's going to be the prime one for today as far as what he's been doing. Farrah and I, we don't have trips anytime really soon. However, I like to feel like I'm always planning for my next trip. So I guess we'll start with, how do we decide on when to go? Jimmy, how did you decide on this trip? What was your biggest thing as far as going to this time of the year?
You know, going into the websites and things of that nature that I use, I really use the touringplans.com website, and I use the crowd calendar. And, you know, this trip is just me and my wife. The kids aren't coming, so with that, we have a lot of flexibility on when we can go. So we don't have to plan around school and things like that, which is typically the busier times of the year. So we usually look for a good week. I mean, obviously, we were trying to plan a trip during the Food and Wine Festival. That's one of the reasons we go at this time of the year. But then even digging a little deeper to figure out when during the Food and Wine Festival I want to go, I use the crowd calendar on touringplans.com, and I look for the best weeks because even though the Food and Wine Festival is only a month and a half long, the crowds could vary quite a bit.
Right. Now, you mentioned the crowd calendar. I use the crowd calendar a lot, and I kind of just mention it in that way with not really explaining what I'm talking about. Len Testa from the Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World has the website touringplans.com. It's a great site in that they have a crowd calendar based on statistics over the last maybe 10, 15, or even 20 years of park hours, crowds, and times of the year. It's a really, really good resource. And basically, the crowd calendar is on a scale of 1 to 10, a 1 being an empty day, a 10 being basically you're going to be walking on other people's shoulder day. But I tell you what, Jimmy mentioned about how it's fun to go during the off season when people are at school. Unfortunately, I don't do that anymore, and I've been going as far as the last couple of years in the summertime. So my crowd calendar is pretty basic. It's either going to be 9 or 10.
Wow.
But for everybody else, when you do have that freedom, you definitely could take advantage of it.
Yeah, guys, I also use the crowd calendar when I'm planning a trip. I use it in a couple different ways. Before I have actually planned the trip, you know, when I'm still trying to get ideas of what would be the best time to go, of course, I have an idea or two about when I want to go because of certain events like the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party or the Christmas party or maybe sometime around Mardi Gras. But the first thing I do is check out the crowd calendar. And I literally, you know, Ed, you were talking about the number system. I literally go through the entire year. And if it's over like a 5 or a 6 for the week, that's out. Yeah, I go and I look for the lowest times, any 1s, 2s, 3s, the lowest times. And then from those, usually, that's like my starting point of where I want to go. And then I kind of look like for crossovers for the certain events that that I want to go to. So that's why usually we end up somewhere in the October, November range, maybe like the first or second week in November, we usually end up there because I can usually get some really low crowd calendar days. And then I can also get the Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party. And sometimes, I think the last time we went, we managed to cut across to the Christmas party, too, because it was just starting up. So I use it in that kind of more less specific way when I'm actually trying to get dates going. And then I go in and I also look at those events like Jersey Week or the Pop Warner the little league football events right. That they have with all the billions of tweens that are there, which I generally try to avoid. but I use it in that way. And then once I've got the trip booked, I'm usually about maybe 2-3 months out, and I'm looking to plan all of my dinners and that kind of stuff. I go in and I look, for each day specifically, what the breakdown is for the crowd calendar, and that's when I plan which parks I'm going to go to and which days. So I use it a lot. I use the touringplans.com a lot, not so much for the touring plans, but for the crowd calendar, definitely.
Those are great reasons to use the touring calendar. I kind of do it for the same thing, although once I nail the days I'm going to go, that's pretty much it. They do mention extra magic hours, which is pretty cool. And Farrah mentioned the touring plans. Have you guys ever used a touring plan?
I've looked at them. I've gone through and I've checked them out to see if I felt maybe they were a little better than the plans that I do. But I do very detailed plans. So... I can see that they would be extremely useful for people that haven't gone a lot.
Right.
But me, I've got some good strategies down myself, so I don't.
So guys, just real quick, because I just pulled it up, the crowd calendar for the time I'm there, leaving on Thursday. The busiest day we're there is a 3.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's Saturday, September 28th. Every other day that we're going to be there is either a 1 or a 2.
That's not right. That's so unfair.
We also use it to a little bit to figure out where we're going to be each day. And we don't really plan that too much. But we do as far as our dining reservations, because we're going with 3 dining. And... I don't know if you've noticed, but the parks they keep you away from are the ones with the extra magic hours. Because typically, if someone's going to go and they have a pass with no park hoppers, they're going to go where they get the most bang for their buck. So they're all going to go to that park with the extra hours.
Right.
So we usually avoid that park as much as we can. And then if we're going to go, we go for the extra magic hours. But the rest of the day, we're trying to spend our time somewhere else.
Yeah, agreed. We generally do the same thing, except if we're going at a time that's really low across the board. If you're talking about all of them having like 2s and 3s and or 2.7 versus a 2.3 for the crowd calendar count, and we really, it makes sense for us to go to that park, that day, even though it is the magic hours, we'll end up going, but generally we tend to avoid the magic hour parks on those days.
Mm-hmm. Very good. One last thought about the crowd calendar, however, is that even though it says a 1 for a day at Walt Disney World, and that park might not have extra magic hours, you could still show up. We'll use Epcot as an example. Go to Soarin' and still be in a big line. So it kind of gives you the estimate of what the park's going to be like. However, the busy rides will still be busy. That just doesn't change.
I agree.
So now we know kind of what time of the year we're going. And then I guess from what part of the country you're coming from, you'll have to decide on transportation. Most people fly because they're just too far away from Walt Disney World or don't want to make that drive.
So, Sarah, what do you guys typically do when you go? You fly, you drive?
Yeah, we used to drive all the time when when I was a kid and everything, but the very first time that we flew, that was it. It was like, what were we doing? 13 hours in a car with all of us packed in there versus, let's see, the very first time we flew, my friend's dad dropped us off at the airport. We got on the airplane. We got over there. We flew to Orlando. We were walking out of the thing, and we called her dad to see to let him know we were there. He was just walking in from into the house from dropping us off. So, I just love it. I love it. Love the fact that you're there. You're not exhausted. You don't feel like you've lost all this time, and you can go immediately to the park if you want.
You know, we've done both. The last few times I've gone, we drove, and it really just depends. This time we're going, we're flying. But a lot of that has to do with this time it's just me and my wife. So plane tickets, you know, we caught a sale on Southwest, and mm-hmm. the round trip tickets were right around $400. So it wasn't that much more to fly than it would be to drive. But when we do go, and it's the four of us, me, Kim, and the kids, plane tickets then go to $800, where driving is still around $300. Yeah. So if it's going to be the four of us, usually if it's the four of us, we'll drive. We have fun with the kids before, but typically we'll go ahead and drive.
I miss the good old days of Southwest ding when, you'd get that little ding. We've gotten airfare for as low as $25 each way. So $50 round trip to Orlando was pretty awesome. Yeah, I know. That was really before the I think Southwest had their fuel locked in for a long period of time, and then that expired, and then their prices started going way up, from what it was. But still, I love it.
I think in 2007, it was either 2007 or 2008. Me, my wife, and the two kids, all four of us flew round trip for like $550. It was like $69 flights or something like that.
Well, when it's that cheap, you have to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But I kind of have the same theory as Jimmy does. When the four of us go, it's really too expensive to fly down. And we just kind of take into account that we're going to lose the day on both sides of that. So, you kind of count that into your planning. Plus, as a teacher, I have my summers a little bit freer than most people do, so I do have that extra time we can fly. I mean, we can drive down with. But when you get a good rate, you have to take advantage of it. The last couple of years, we've actually driven both times, and it wasn't that bad. I like to have my own car down in Walt Disney World. I think it's great to be able to just kind of pile in, have everything you need, and not deal with the whole packing issue. Packing to get on a plane, that's just this extra stress factor, as far as I'm concerned, to make sure you have a 50-pound bag versus a 51-pound bag.
And my wife, she likes to collect the snow globes. So
you can't take them home, then.
Right, you can't take them home unless you're willing to put it in your luggage, which, I mean, who's going to put a snow globe in their luggage? So you end up having to ship it home, which is like $15. Having the car, on this trip, I looked for the whole, 9 days we're there, I could rent a car for $150.
Right.
Yeah. So, do you normally do that?
I don't think we're going to.
We pretty much do every time, and we do it. It's really weird that we would, because, they have the free shuttle service where you can go from the airport to the hotel. But we normally do, especially if we have kids, because we kind of we use the car, we don't really use the bus system too much, especially, let me say this, we rent a car, especially if we're staying at one of the all-star resorts, and one of the resorts that are farther out, because what we do, to save the day that we're going to go to Magic Kingdom, we make sure that, our breakfast or our supper meal, which we'll make sure that they're at maybe the Polynesian or Wilderness Lodge, and then say whichever one it's at, we actually drive the car and we park at that resort, jump on the monorail or jump on the boat from there, go to the park, and then come back when when it's time to go to the meal. So,
and they never give you a problem with getting there that much earlier?
No, I've never had a problem. We normally just tell them, yeah, we're there for a character breakfast, or we're there for a meal, and that's it. The only one time have I ever had an issue, and it was at the boardwalk. We were tried to park at the boardwalk, and we were going to go run to Epcot and go do Epcot and then come back and eat at, I think it was Cat Cora's place, and they wouldn't let us park there. But we've done it, I can't even tell you, 30 times, 40 times.
And for all you listeners, the email address is thedisneynerds@yahoo.com, and you can put those attention Farrah. Farrah's breaking some cardinal Disney rules there.
Yeah. So
We'll forward those emails directly to Farrah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a new message thread on the Facebook page.
That's right. Would you guys both agree that, you know, the one park that it's not beneficial to drive to would be the Magic Kingdom, right? Because you still have to, even if you do get a great parking spot, you're still at the TTC. You're not at the front of the park,
right,
where the bus is going to drop you off right in front.
Right. Yeah, I agree with
that
one. The only downside to that is if you do stay at the Value Resorts, they happen to be the furthest bus stop away. I think we're almost at
exactly.
the Contemporary when we were at the Pop Century last time.
You could almost take a bus.
Yeah. And that drives me nuts. That's exactly why, you know, I'm not, you know, I got two little kids and, you know, we're just out of the stroller range, but two kids, a husband, you know, stroller, all these bags and stuff. Oh, it's just so much easier to plan our character breakfast and Ohana's on the same day that we go to Magic Kingdom, park at the Polynesian and just take the little monorail, you know, eat, take the monorail, then do Magic Kingdom and come back and do our evening meal.
Oh, sounds like a plan. Okay, so as we were preparing to go to Walt Disney World, we've gotten the time of the year we're going, we found out how we're getting there. The next big question we always come up against is, where are we going to stay and how are we going to pay for our, not how we're going to pay, but where are we going to get our tickets from? The easiest thing to do would probably be go through one of the travel agencies like Jimmy Runs, where they basically do everything for you. There's some of us out there that have been to Disney World so many times, though, that we prefer to kind of do it on our own, too. So there's different ways to think about the whole getting down there, where you're going to stay thing. Have you guys ever stayed off property?
I have.
Okay.
I have as well.
Every other time it seems to be that way now. Like, we're going 1 year off, 1 year on, and we're kind of bouncing back and forth.
I'll be honest with you. I don't particularly like it.
Me neither.
I think, you know, for me, and don't get me wrong, it's got its advantages. I have a friend of mine that I work with last year. He actually is from Morocco and worked at the Moroccan Pavilion. Disney actually recruited him. That's how he ended up in this country, is Disney recruited him. And but he went just a year or so ago, and he rented a house there for cheaper than you could probably, you know, like
yes.
a four-bedroom house with
right.
a built-in pool for cheaper than
yes.
you could probably rent a Value Resort.
That's the great thing about that. I mean, you can get some outstanding rentals for cheap with
yeah.
swimming pools and the whole thing, you know. But it's
yeah.
just, I don't know, you just, I love the
I
Disney
like
magic.
Yeah. When I hit the sign that says, "Welcome to Walt Disney World," I don't want to see it again until it's time for me to, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I like being immersed in the, you know, I like being,
that is
it's
it.
Almost like, you know, when you stay enough property, although there is some advantages, definitely monetarily, but every day leaving the park, having to drive back or even just take a shuttle back and getting
yeah.
into just the regular city and seeing the Chili's and the Shoney's and the gas stations and the, you know.
It's like you're at home again.
Yeah, it really is. So
yeah.
I've done both, and I haven't done off Disney property in quite a while. A couple years ago, we stayed a couple nights off property before we started our trip. But other than that, we usually stay on property. For our honeymoon, we stayed off property. I'm not saying it's terrible, but just I'm at a point now where I think I'd rather take just a – if it means going once twice every 3 years versus every year, I'd rather stay on Disney property. And you know what? I stay at the Value Resort, so they're not that expensive. If you catch them right, usually by the time you pay $17 a day to park because you're on an off-site resort, if you can catch 30% off the room or get free dining at a Value Resort, the money difference usually isn't that much.
Right. I tell you what, we'll probably have another show talking about this as far as the economics of planning a trip. However, I have stayed off, like I said, a couple times in the last couple years, and it depends on the place and how much of a deal you get. The last trip, just a real quick example, we paid about $55 a night. We stayed in a room that was twice the size of the Pop Century room. It had a refrigerator, it had a microwave, it had a separate little kitchenette area. The hotel was located right at the bottom of the World Drive, maybe about, I'd say, the first set of hotels as you go west on I-192, and to get to Hollywood Studios, it would take us 4 or 5 minutes to be actually coming into the parking lot. So it really does depend on where you stay, and it also depends on how often you go. Yeah, if you go once every 3 years, you got to stay on property. You have no choice with that. That's right. A must. If you're going every year and you want to keep going every year, well, you got to take some concessions. And one of those concessions is sometimes staying off property, which makes that whole crowd calendar even more important because we want to avoid those days that they have extra magic hours at those parks because we can't go and we know everybody else is going to be.
And, you know, just one other quick part, you mentioned a little bit about the travel agency and, you know, how different people plan their trips. You know, obviously, I have a travel agency we run on the side, and I tell people all the time, because I deal with a lot of people who have been a bunch of times, I can be involved, even if you book your trip through a travel agent, the travel agent can be involved as little or as much as you like. I can, you know, the travel agent can do everything for you, or I can just book the trip and just help you along with the rest of the stuff. Well, I have clients who like me to handle everything, reservations, do the whole thing for them. Then I also have some that say, hey, book this for me, but I want to handle my dining reservations on my own because I enjoy doing that.
So you can do as much as you want to be comfortable with then.
That's it.
Very good.
Exactly.
Okay, we took a pause for the show and Tom joined us. Tom, just to fill you in where we've been, we've started talking about how we prepare for a trip to Walt Disney World. We touched base on maybe how we figure out what time of the year to go. Then we talked about basically how we get there, transportation-wise. Then the big question was where you're going to stay. And what we've gotten to now is basically what do we do about tickets. Now, Jimmy's got the experience as far as the travel agency. So he's going to talk to us really quick about how you put together the packages that Walt Disney World offers.
So basically, you have a couple different options. You can do room only. Just book your room through Disney and buy your ticket somewhere else. If you're going to buy your ticket somewhere else, I would recommend Undercover Tourist. They are a good, reputable site that offers discount Disney tickets. But the only time that really comes into play is if you're going to stay off grounds or if Disney's offering some type of room discount and not free dining. And you may want to book your room and your tickets separately. But generally what happens is people book a package, and the packages are called Magic Your Way packages. And there's lots of different options, but basically it is room and ticket packages. And then with the tickets, you can go park hopper or no park hopper. You can go water and fun option, and you can also go no expiration option. If you don't do the no expiration option, the tickets do expire 14 days from their first use. And then along with that, you can get in the Magic Your Way with counter service dining, with the Disney Plus dining, and the deluxe dining. But that's a whole nother show, really, to be honest with you.
Yes, a couple shows at least.
Yes.
Okay, so basically, as far as eating goes, you can go a lot of different ways. Jimmy was talking about the restaurants where you can get the dining plan. You could budget out your meals, or you could basically eat everything you want, sit down. Again, it comes down to planning and what you want to do money-wise. The thing to remember is that you can start booking your Disney reservations for restaurants about 180 days out from your trip. And I only bring that up because when there is free dining, all the reservations tend to disappear. So you want to make sure you keep checking to find out what's happening around the time you're going to Walt Disney World. And that'll kind of guide you as far as making your dinner reservations.
And just a quick tip on that. It's 180 days out from the first day of your trip. So if you're there for 7 days, you're going to be able to book that seventh, the last day you're there, 187 days before you get there. So, and that's even really, really more important if there's free dining out there.
Right. I've done the dining plan before, and with the kids nowadays, it's not really too cost effective for us, so we've kind of stopped. What about you guys?
Well, I've never done the dining plan. One reason being is that we've always done like block a time of 2 trips back-to-back years. We always get annual passes for those to cover those 2 trips, and annual passes can't get the dining plan. So we do Tables in Wonderland to offset that. So.
Tables in Wonderland is a good. Tables in Wonderland is basically a discount program. Now, if you have the, I have heard of people who want, say, the free dining came out, Tom. Even though you have the annual pass, you can book your hotel room for you and your wife each with just a 1 day pass, and you can still get the free dining.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some of those cases, it may be beneficial. And some not. I mean, a lot of times if you're staying at a moderate or deluxe resort, going with the annual pass discount on the room versus free dining is going to save you more money.
Yeah, that's what we've always done. We've never stayed at a value resort. My wife has. I personally have not. So, we've always taken advantage of the annual pass discounts for multiple things. And we normally split the cost of a Tables in Wonderland card with whoever we're going, because we normally go with one of our parents. And so if we'd covered half of it, they'd cover the other half, and we'd all reap the benefits of the Tables in Wonderland, because it covers the alcohol too, which is one thing the dining plan is not.
Oh, very absolutely. True.
Go ahead, Farrah.
I was just gonna say I'm not familiar with the Tables of Wonderland.
I was gonna say the same thing to Tom. Tom, there's a lot of people that don't know what that is because they've didn't have to use it yet. Can you give us a real quick description and how much it costs?
I believe it's $199 or $100, something like that. It's a discount card that gives you 20% off of your total bill up to, I believe, 9 people at the majority of restaurants. And there's a couple places that does not. There's a website, I believe it's tableswonderland.com. I believe that's what it is. That tells you the restaurants that's covered under it. And, like, for example, we used it at Tusker Halls for a character breakfast this past trip. And, you know, 20% off of a group of, I think, maybe 8. You know, that's a huge dent off of the bill.
Wow.
And as I said, if you go to... Because it covers a lot of the downtown Disney place. Like, you know, me and my wife are... Tradition always go to Fulton's Crab House, and we have a drink there. And at the Table of Wonderland, we'll cover the alcohol beverages that we get at Fulton's Crab House. It's in some ways almost better than the free dining, because it's, you know, you still have to pay for the, you know, for the dining plans. Maybe not for free dining, but for the ones you pay for. To me, the Table of Wonderland comes out to be a better deal just because of what everything it covers, because it covers multiple people and multiple places, and also getting covers your alcohol.
I would say, you know, with the current price of the Disney Dining Plan, you know, I don't know, unless you're a really good planner and you know exactly the places you want to eat and you plan it correctly, I don't know if it's a great deal. At one time it was. I think the first time we did it, and we ended up getting it for free, but even if you'd have paid for it, back then it was like $35 per adult. And it included the appetizer and gratuity. And now it's over $50 per adult and doesn't include gratuity or an appetizer.
Right. I was going to say that as far as free dining, it's almost a misnomer. Because if you go to a meal that costs a couple hundred dollars, you're not paying for the meal, but you are going to tip the waiter.
You are going to tip. Absolutely.
And if you're going to drink anything at dinner other than like the soft drinks, then you're going to pay for that too. So it's definitely a... Don't get me wrong, free dining is free dining. It's great, but it's not 100% free.
I agree. I guess I would tell you, I mean, it's still not 100% free, but if you get the free dining at a value resort, you're getting free counter service dining, which would be free. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I just saw something the other day where the IRS is changing the rules to companies, to restaurants that add an automatic gratuity, that they have to include that as a fee and pay taxes on that money.
Oh, wow.
Even though it's a tip and it goes directly to, if they're going to make it mandatory, they have to include it as a fee. And that, so you may see a lot of those places do away. You know, at Disney World, I think they always add it. But even local restaurants, you know, usually you'll see a party of six or more, a party eight or more is a mandatory so much percentage gratuity. They just changed the rules on that, where the restaurant has to claim that as a fee and pay taxes on that money. And just another quick note, in our first episode, when we talked about the free dining plan and the Chase card, if you have a Disney debit card or a Disney credit card through Chase, you do get 10% off of select dining locations. And there's a list if you go to DisneyDebit.com. There is actually a list of the restaurants, but each place has some place that you can get 10% off your bill.
Sounds like we're building up a whole list of shows we're going to do in the future.
Yeah.
We could do an entire one just on the buying the food and what to do in that regards.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've covered basically when we're going, how we're getting there, where we're staying, how do we get in the park, and what we're eating. I guess the final topic is really just what we're going to do in the parks. Now, this was kind of strange in that we talked a little bit before the show about this as far as all the planning. Now, Jimmy's going down next week. Or actually, I take that back. He's going down in a couple of days. So, Jimmy, what do you have planned for the parks?
You know, we really don't plan. I know that's going to shock. I know that's gonna make Ed choke.
I'm choking.
It's going to make Ed choke. but, you know, we really, our planning is at a minimal. And you know what? When we first started going to Walt Disney World, we planned a lot. But at this point, we feel like we've been there enough where we don't require a lot of planning. I'm content going there with a little thing of popcorn and sitting on a park bench and just kind of just listening to the music and kind of watching people.
That definitely is a symptom of somebody who goes to the parks too often.
That's probably true. But, you know, we don't feel rushed. To be honest with you, I think we enjoy it more than the people that don't go that often at all, because we don't feel that pressure to go ride Space Mountain six times. So we actually don't plan a whole lot. We do plan our dining reservations and have a pretty good idea of what parks we're going to be in what days, but we definitely don't plan attraction to attraction, and our plan is very open. I would never go to the parks without park hoppers, because it's just too many times I've been and you get to a park and it's very crowded and you just, you know, we hop out and, you know, and go to a different park because we just feel like we our time is spent better somewhere else. So our planning is to a minimum. And, you know, when we first started going, that probably wasn't the case. But, you know, after a couple trips a year, or at least a trip a year for the past, you know, 7 years, we know the parks well enough, and there are certain things that we like to do that we feel like we have to do, but that list is short, probably.
I do a lot of planning as far as where we're going to be on certain days, and it's primarily because, you know, when we do, no matter if we're getting free dining or not, we always try to make sure we're at least at the level where we have one sit-down meal a day, because we just really, really, really prefer the sit-down meals over the counter service. I could completely I could not do counter service at all. We spend a lot of times in the hotels. The hotels that we're not even staying at. So, you know, we do a lot of kind of just, you know, chilling out at Grand Floridian or at Wilderness Lodge, making sure we're hitting the places that we want to eat. So, like I was saying, this last time we went, we got free dining with the one sit down, one counter service, and we actually pay to get the next level, which I guess is the Premier or the Platinum, where you get the three sit downs. But we primarily did it not because we wanted, you know, 3 sit-down meals full of food. We wanted to get be able to go and, you know, I guess for the experience. We wanted to try out a couple of new restaurants that we knew were going to be too crowded each, like California Grill and Le Cellier, and I loved it. I absolutely loved a whole bunch of new restaurants that we had not yet tried. But yeah, I loved it. I usually plan quite a lot, and it's usually because of the sit-down meals that we have. But we make it flexible so that if we don't feel like doing something a certain day, I just I pop on that the Disney reservation, Disney dining number, and we make changes.
Very good. Tom, how about you? How do you handle the planning of going to the parks?
Well, we're pretty soft as far as how we plan, but we do plan kind of based around when the extra magic hours are. That's kind of like a soft plan. So we kind of take a look at our schedule, when we're going to be there, and then take a look at what parks have extra magic hours and what days, and kind of based upon where we're going to go from there, and that kind of starts building the other plans as far as what where do we want to eat and what days.
Yeah, very cool. We kind of do the same thing. Now, I was laughing about Jimmy not doing much planning, and we really don't do a lot of minute-to-minute planning. We will decide on what park we're going to usually that day. Also, a little different than Jimmy is we haven't used park hoppers in a couple years. We feel that basically once we get to the park, we're going to try to stick to it. What it does is helps us save about $50 each per trip. And whenever I see like a $50 bill, I think of a counter service meal for 3 of us or for 4 of us type of thing. So if there's something new, however, that is something that gets in our plans. And that's something we have to do, so we do try to plan around it. The new Jack Sparrow experience in Hollywood Studios was one of those things. The new Fantasyland in Magic Kingdom was another one, where we had a plan to get to the park for a rope drop, and basically we kind of beelined it after the Space Mountain passes right to that. But yeah, nothing really full. We kind of leave it open to see what happens. Well, it seems like we've covered all the different ways we can get down to Disney World and what we can do there for our planning. I think that's it for this week. Before we leave, we wanted to reach out or shout out to our friends at the Disney Nerds Facebook page. Guys, please keep commenting. We love to hear your comments, and we want to hear what you think about the show. We're also looking for show ideas and for extra people to help us out as far as guests. So if you're interested in recording and hearing yourself on the internet, definitely give us an email or leave a message on the Facebook page. So we're going to sign off for today and look forward to next week's show, because Jimmy's going to be down in Walt Disney World and we're going to try to record with him in the parks. So I think we might do some type of guessing game perhaps, where we start out trying to figure out where Jimmy is. So if you have a chance, you could stop by our my blog. I have a Disney blog out there, themazdisneyblog.blogspot.com. We also have another podcast I do with the kids, the We're Going to Walt Disney World podcast, and we're on iTunes.
Yep. Also, I just want to throw in there, you can email the Disney Nerds podcast at yahoo.com, and also check out my Facebook page. It's Once Upon a Time Travel.
This is Farrah signing off. Hopefully soon I'll have my own page.
So Tom, signing off for the week. Hope you guys have a great week and have some magical memories made in the future.
Okay, guys, we'll see you on the Facebook page. Talk to you later.
See ya.
Adios. Bye-bye. I had a thought, and I looked up to see. The sign read the park, she's closed today. E-tickets don't work here no more anyway. Where every day's a magic day to be free, you see. It's a nice day when you wake up in Disneyland. It's a nice day, should you wake up in Disneyland. It's your lucky day, should you wake up in Disneyland. It's a nice day, should you wake up in Disneyland.